Our scripture reading this morning will be taken from the book of James, chapter 1. James, chapter 1, and I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. Beginning with verse 16. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of His will, He brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we would be a kind of first fruits among His creatures. I hope you're enjoying our study in the book of James, and you see that we're taking it pretty slow. I think this may be the fourth or fifth lesson just from chapter one, and we're not done yet. But I hope that you can appreciate the wisdom that are found in these words, and by breaking it up somewhat like Proverbs of the Old Testament, glean the truths, the pearls, that are buried there within. What makes the perfect gift? Do you remember receiving one? What birthday was it? I can remember, I know that I was less than 6 years old because we moved away from the house that I can visualize this particular gift that I received. When I was 6 years old, we moved from one place to another. And so I know that this gift came to me before I was six. Maybe it was at age six on my birthday. I just don't know that. But I can remember standing on the front porch of this house and unwrapping this box that was humongous. Oh, I was excited. Anything big for a child six or less is impressive. And as I unwrapped this box, I got a surprise. It was something that I didn't expect, but perhaps it's the gift that I had asked for. I don't recall asking for it. It was a car care kit. Chamois, wax, detergents for washing a car. And I was excited. I look back on it now and I think, Dad had something to do with that. Dad wanted his car cleaned. I'm sure that was it. But I can remember looking at that stuff and thinking, today I'm a man. What was the gift that you received that was just right? Was it a surprise? Was it something that you requested? Can you remember it as clearly as that? In this particular passage here in James chapter 1, James says something that is very revealing about our Heavenly Father. And yet the premise that is laid out here, or the very foundation for what is laid out, is indicative of His benevolence and providential care. Like a parent who can assess exactly what their child desires or needs, maybe it would be a better way to say it, and gives them that which is just right, James says of God, every good thing and every perfect gift comes from above. Let that soak in for just a minute. We're not going to sing this song, so don't grab your songbook. You can turn to it, I guess, but it's hymn number 538. My Jesus knows when I am lonely. He knows each pain. He sees each tear. He understands each lonely heartache. He understands because He cares. And then the chorus. My Jesus knows just what I need. Oh, yes. He knows just what I need. He satisfies and every need supplies. Yes, He knows just what I need. You know, there were other things that I received from my dad that at the time I didn't want. If he ever started the conversation like this, "Stanton, I've got a bone to pick with you," it was not going to be happy days or here again. I had that conversation with my dad when I was a senior in high school. We'd just come back from our senior trip. And you have to understand the situation. Our seniors, most of them, were from the children's home where my dad was the superintendent. I wasn't just one of the classmates. I was the warden's son. And I had this terrible position in the sense that I knew what those boys would be up to, but I wanted them to be my friends. And so in my mind's eye, I had decided, if Dad doesn't ask, I won't tell him. Well, he found out some things that went on the senior trip. And he felt like I should have bared my soul about what some of those guys were up to. And I thought, well, you know what I thought, because I didn't do that. And when he came in that day and said, "Stanton, I've got a bone to pick with you," and he set me down and he said, "Did you know?" "Yes, Dad, I knew." "Well, did you know?" "Yeah, Dad, I knew." "But you didn't tell me." And I can remember trying to defend myself to my dad of why I didn't rat out my friends. And I still look back on that day, and now I look at it from his point of view, from his vantage point, and I think, wow, that was not an easy situation to be in. Sometimes fathers, and I understand this from being one, and grandfathers get it wrong. And that's not to make a judgment call in this particular situation. But do you know, our Heavenly Father never gets it wrong. Every good thing, every perfect gift cometh from above. And you're going to hear that phrase over and over and over in this lesson because I want it to resonate within our minds that He knows. He not only knows just what I need, He satisfies. And every need supplies. That doesn't mean that I always get what I want, but I always get what I need from Him. You say, "But I'm not always happy with what I receive." Did you have one of those occasions or two? I had one of those at age 12. I can remember the presents, the Christmas presents at age 12, and I got a green and tan and black striped sweater. There's even a picture of it in Mom's photo album of me wearing this sweater. You know, you take pictures of everybody's gifts, and you've never seen a guy look sadder than the way I look in that picture. I am sitting there or standing there against the closet door with this sweater on, and I am not smiling. Now, not smiling is not my nature, but I was not happy with that sweater that I got. It could have been Joseph's coat of many colors, and at age 12, that wasn't what I had in mind. Give me a gun. Give me a knife. Give me a bow and arrow. A sweater? I mean, really? Now, Mom's going to hear this and she's going to say, "Stanton, I don't remember that sweater." Mom, look in your photo album. It's there. Sometimes we may not be as grateful as we should be for what God does for us and what God gives to us. But if I'll but have the confidence that God knows what I need, so that when life happens to me, rather than being critical of what's coming my way, James is basically saying, accept the fact that He's the Father. He's in control. He's the head. He's the guide. He's the authority. And whatever He decides you need is what you need. The Hebrew writer says that sometimes that may take the form of chastening or rebuke. For as many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. But it is still what I need right now. If I am God's child and I'm trusting in Him. So that we know that good things sometimes may not be happy days. Coincidentally, we've been studying in 1 Corinthians, and this morning's lesson was 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verses 1 through 11. And the first part of that passage talks about all the blessings, all the miraculous things that God did for the children of Israel. The cloud. The parting of the sea. Being immersed into Moses and the power that he had because he was God's man. Probably inferring the plagues. The manna. The water from the rock. What was God doing in all? Well, certainly he was providing for the Exodus and the children of Israel to be delivered and to give them food and drink while they were in the wilderness. But all of those were miraculous. What was God saying? I'm your father. I am here to deliver you. I am here to protect you. I am here to destroy your enemies. As that crashing walls of water come down upon Pharaoh and his army. But then Paul says, and yet God was not pleased with them. And then he lists the things that they did. They turned to idolatry in the golden calf. They turned to worshiping in whoredom with the Moabites. They turned instead to murmuring and complaining, and God sent the fiery serpents. He even opened up the earth and swallowed Dathan and Korah and Abiram in their rebellion. And then close the earth back up. There's God at work in His people. Now, if you're on the receiving end of some of that stuff, you're the one that gets the fangs sunk into you. You're the one that gets swallowed up by the earth or by the sea. You're the one that suffers. You may think, well, this is not a God that's benevolent. As many as I love, Hebrews chapter 12, I rebuke and chasten. He knows just what I need. Now, it may be hindsight that I come to realize that particular event in my life that was not pleasant, that I would just as soon not have happened, that was a defining moment for me. I changed at that very moment in time to trust God more. And if you proved faithful, then that's exactly what did happen. How sad it is to doubt what God does in our lives and become like one with whom God is not pleased. Do you see what James is saying? I'm going to take verse 16 for this afternoon. There are four times that this phrase is used in the New Testament. Do not be deceived. Twice as Paul writes to the Corinthians, another time to the Galatians. This passage here in verse 16 of James chapter 1, where James uses it, do not be deceived. Now, I know that's arbitrary, but preachers get to be that way. They can be arbitrary now and then. And so that's going to be my lesson for this afternoon, because I think, what is it that I need to be aware of that Satan would fool me on? And there's some pretty important lessons out of each of those times that it's not everything all inclusive of what the Scriptures teach, but there are some things there that I think are very helpful when it comes to trusting God and not allowing Satan to dissuade me, discourage me, or deceive me into doing things that are contrary to what God says. So that was an advertisement. You have to come back now to the lesson. Every good thing and every perfect gift is from above. The word perfect there in the Greek can be translated many different ways, in the sense that it could be perfect, or it could be mature, or it could be complete. And I think it depends upon the context as to how it needs to be translated. But I have written out on the marquee a simple statement. God's gifts are always perfect, especially the gift of His Son. And that latter part we're going to take toward the end of the lesson. But God's gifts are always perfect. If I'm walking as God would have me to walk, doing my best to be faithful to Him and obedient to His will, that doesn't mean that I never make mistakes. But if I am trusting Him to guide me, to watch over me, and to protect me, then I need to have the confidence that what happens, even though it might be contrary to what I want or what I would have willed or a direction that I would not have taken on my own, if I have prayed to God and trusted Him to answer those prayers and to direct my life, then I have to believe in His providence. though it not agree with my own assessment. I mean, what am I praying for if everything I get is exactly what I ask for? I'm the one in control, not God. We'll get into James chapter 4 a little later, much later, if I'm the one doing the preaching. But in James chapter 4, he says, you don't get what you ask for because you ask amiss. To spend it on your passions. In other words, I can get so caught up in what I want that I ignore what I need. But if I trust that God knows that everything that really is good for me, whether it be a gift or a rebuke, is what I need at the time, and I simply turn to God and I say, thy will be done, then I'm walking in faith. He promises that, doesn't he? And God will work all things together for good to them that love him and are called according to his purpose. There is no temptation overtaken you but such as is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond that which you are able, but will with the temptation provide a way of escape. Those are promises. And here James, by the way, who is James? Who do we think he is? The half-brother of Jesus. Did he trust God? Namely, did he trust his brother Jesus when they walked together on earth? No. Did he accept that Jesus was deity? No. What was the problem, James? James was not a man of faith when it came to the Christ walking beside him, sleeping on the mat next door in his house. James was not, along with his brothers, one who trusted that Jesus was who he claimed to be. In John chapter 7, he even ridicules Jesus at the end of his life. Why don't you just go on up there and present yourself to the Jews? Who cares if they want to kill you? That was a taunt. A deadly taunt. And yet he's the one writing this? What's happened to James? Every good thing and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, in whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. He's made a transition, hasn't he? Where do I stand in my relationship with Jesus? It's easy to sing about. He knows just what I need, and every need he supplies and satisfies. It's another to live it. And yet here James is trying to console the brethren who have been scattered about into all parts of the earth, to the Jews, the 12 tribes that are in dispersion, he begins this chapter with. And he knows their suffering. And so he says, count it all joy when you fall into diverse temptation, knowing that the trying of your faith produces patience. Do you hear it? Providential care of God. It just resonates in this book. He knows Jesus now, doesn't he? Who's the authority? It's the Father. Who calls the shots? It's my God. What's my job? Like Job, even in the midst of trial and great loss, to be patient, to be confident, to trust that God knows what's best for me. What did God give you today? Did you look at the sun? Do you think that was an accident? Did you sit down to eat? Have you had breakfast? Some of you didn't. I know. But if you're a good farmer, you know that's one of the most important meals of the day. Where'd you get that food? Have you had something to quench your thirst? I'm glad you're wearing clothes. I'm glad you slept in a place, though it may not have been the most comfortable of places. I'm glad you had some covering. If you're blessed with relationships, do you think that came out of thin air? A mate? A child? A friend? A grandchild? I received 2 sets of letters, actually 3, in the mail this week. And I said, honey, because I'm talking to her, she's in Kansas, I said, all the envelopes are pink. She said, "Papa, you got lots of granddaughters." Sweet little notes sent back to Mama and Papa Sykes. In working on this lesson, he knows just what I need. We love you. We can't wait to see you. Where does that come from? One of them even said this: "Thank you for raising Mama like you did." Whoa! Every good thing and every perfect gift comes from above. If we'd but take the time, we'd see that every week. We'd see that every day. We'd see how our daily bread is provided by Him. "Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be Thy name. Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us of our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For Thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever." What a faith. Who said that prayer first? Jesus. To His disciples. To train us to understand. God blesses us every which way that we can think of. It's all, if it's good, it's from God. And it's completely right and needful what He gives to us. My dad used to use this phrase. He says, "Son, this is going to hurt me more than it's going to hurt you." And I thought, yeah, right. I know what you're about to do. And I'm on the receiving end of this. When did I understand He knew what He was talking about? When it became my place to discipline. It's not that God desires to cause us hurt or pain or loss, but there are times when we need to be directed. We're like stiff-necked horses that have to be reined, have to be turned, or else we will go to our own perdition. Do you trust God? The last verse of what we're reading today in verse 18 says, "And the most perfect gift that He gave to us," is the last part of what's written out on the marquee. God's gifts are always perfect, especially the gift of His Son. If you can't think of anything else at this moment in time that God has given you that's worth faithfulness to Him, then think about your salvation. Where would you be without forgiveness? Where would you be without reconciliation? Where would you be without a oneness with God that says, "He not only loves me, He's providing physically for me, and He has given me a ticket to heaven through the blood of His Son"? Look at this verse. Here's what James is saying. Every good thing comes from God. In the exercise of His will, He brought us forth by the word of truth so that we would be a kind of first fruits among His creatures. What James has just said is God wanted to save me. And through His word of truth, He provided it. "For I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ," Paul says in Romans 1:16. "For it is the power of God unto salvation." Do you hear that? Do you think the gospel just appeared out of nowhere? With little or no cost or forethought? What made it possible for me to go down into a tub of water and come up reconciled? Any water, anywhere. Just enough to be buried in. Be it stream or pond or pool or baptistry or bathtub. The workings of God. Isn't that neat? And Paul says that power of God enables anyone to receive salvation through Jesus Christ, whether he be Jew or Greek, slave or free. Why would anyone be afraid of such a message? Do you hear what James is saying? It's not quite as succinct as what Paul does. "Of His own will, He brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of all His creation. That means of everything that God has made, mountains, streams, bugling elk, mountain goats, rivers, oceans, fertile plains, flowers, trees, hummingbirds. Of everything that God has made, you are more precious than it all. Because that's all going to pass away, but not you, if you'll but heed His will for you. He desires, Peter says simply, God is not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. Now, if you think about God wanting me to be at home with Him forever, and that is the most important thing that I can have happen in my life, wouldn't it make sense that that God who loves me would give me those things which would enable that to happen? For God so loved the world that He gave. He gave. Every good thing and every perfect gift is from above. He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever, even Stanton, believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And this is being penned by a man who doubted, his own brother. Does he realize it now? Oh man, does he ever. I wonder what that epiphany was in James's life. I think it was Christ's resurrection appearance that convinced him, honestly. It says he appeared to 500 all at once. I think James must have been in that bunch somewhere. To have seen your brother hang upon the cross and then his resurrected flesh standing before you must have been like, oh, if only I had trusted. And now what's he doing? He's trying to convince you. He's trying to convince me of things that came too late, possibly, for him to have really appreciated what God was doing in those times that he walked beside that Jesus, his brother. And now he says, you have the opportunity. Trust Him. Believe Him. Follow Him. Because the most perfect gift God has ever given, ever, 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 is the gift of His Son. So that we might be one. Does God want that? With all His heart. He gave His life. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. In the exercise of His will, He brought us forth by the word of truth, so that we would be a kind of first fruits among His creatures. What has Satan got to offer? Nothing good. Nothing perfect. In fact, everything that Satan offers destroys. Jesus says in John chapter 8, he is a murderer and has been from the beginning. When he speaks, there is no truth in him, because he has been a liar from all time. You know, verse 16 is kind of a mystery, because I can attach it to what we talked about last week. God does not tempt anyone with evil. But every man is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lusts and enticed. And when lust hath conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. And then it says, do not be deceived. Is that what that means? It's retro? Or is it then the contrast between what kills and what makes life? And here is God giving only good things. If you were to juxtaposition Satan and God on the same stage, and Satan is standing in front of one door and God is standing in front of the other, and you get to choose which door, door number one or door number two, would you have a hard time deciding? Put on that, you'd say, no. Who in their right mind would choose what Satan's got to offer? but he is a deceiver. Oh, it looks so good. Oh, it tastes wonderful. And it'll make you smart. Lust of the eye, lust of the flesh, the pride of life. Love not the world. How does he do it? How does Satan do it? The majority fall for his story and choose door number two. And it's wide and it's broad, and many there be that go in thereat. Matthew chapter 7, verse 14. For narrow is the way that leads to life, and few there be that find it. Who are you trusting? Don't use your own eyes. Don't make your own judgments. Allow God to direct and to guide. Because only in Him is the way, the truth, and the life. As we stand and as we sing.